Hey there, and welcome to episode 21 of the Better With Running podcast. I'm Zachy Newman, coach at RunTVB and almost Masters runner, and I've got Matty Davey with me. Welcome to the show again, Matt.
Yeah, it's exciting to be back, mate. Yeah, looking forward to having a bit of a chat with you and, going through a few exciting things that have popped up in the last week.
Absolutely, Matt. Yeah, it's obviously still strange times with restrictions in place, but we're still managing to get out and do our 60-minute runs in Melbourne. So that's the highlight of the day for me, you've got to say, after, you know, in between working and all the rest of it, getting out the door at 60 minutes definitely is exciting at the moment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, when we were thinking up the name of this podcast and, you know, we threw a few different ones into the hat and, yeah, we chose Better With Running because, to be honest, at the moment, if I didn't have running, I'd be extremely grumpy and, yeah, not very good to live with.
Yeah. Yeah, it is certainly a release. And it's, you know, seeing people out doing their walks and getting out and running as well. Given that there isn't many other options of exercise out there, you know, the gyms are closed and all the rest of it. So I think, yeah, definitely seeing more people out in the trails. And in talk about trails, mate, I was stalking your Strava and I saw you you jumped on board the 60-minute workouts that we've been pumping out into the community on our socials and via our YouTube channel and all the rest of it. And looks like you had a crack at Sophie Fitt's workout. It's a challenging one too. She set – I was just looking back through this workout because I'm prepping for – either this one or another workout, I'm tossing up between the two. But Sophie's is a 3-minute effort, 90-second recovery, 2-minute, 60-second recovery, 1-minute, 30-second, times by 3. That's how I, that's what's on paper. That's how did it unfold for you, Matty?
Yes, yeah. So she sent it out last week. Had a bit of a think about it. And yeah, just, I don't know. It sort of fit in, I feel like, where I'm at the moment, because I was looking to do that 10K probably in a couple of weeks, but yeah, I've canned that idea and because I just feel like I'm not going to be able to get into shape that I'd like to get into with the restrictions and obviously without having a good course within the 5-kilometer radius to hit a good 10K. So when I saw this one pop up, like, oh, that'd be good because I feel like I can move through the paces a little bit and just get sort of some half marathonish pace at the 3-minute effort, some 10K pace at the 2-minute and hopefully push down in the 1-minute effort at around 5K pace. So I thought, you know, that a good bit of variance in a session. And I felt like that's, for me right now, I kind of want to hit a few different paces, a few different effort levels, and that that suited me. And obviously, yeah, 27 minutes of work. Like I've always liked fartleks. I reckon they're such a fun way to go about a session. You know, you can talk about the benefits of them, but they're also fun to do, and I really enjoy them. And I also like... when I'm not trying to get too specific, I like doing them on a course like this on the trail where there's a few, there's just those few hills and it's not all, you know, perfect surface for you to run on. So yeah, I thought, oh, you want to have a crack at this and head around the Frankston Reservoir. It's within 5Ks of where I live. So it's perfect for that. Woke up to an amazing morning. And I even took the GoPro out there for a bit of.
Did you get the GoPro out?
Yeah, I did actually. I'm steadily working through it over at night, and editing.
Did you run the fartlek with holding the GoPro?
Yeah, I did. Oh, I had a crack.
That's impressive. Yeah.
Well, I feel like, you know, when you do it, you know, back in the day when we used to do 4x100 relays and stuff like that, you know, probably 30 years ago, when the hamstrings could withhold 100-meter sprint, like, yeah. I felt like running with a baton made me faster. So, yeah. I don't know, that's what goes through my head when I'm holding the GoPro and trying to hit a session hard.
Because when I was looking at the map on Strava and I did see you got a CR there that you claim you didn't know that was out on the course, but funnily enough, you actually did nail it. But yeah, I was like, yeah, I actually don't know that area, and that having that reservoir in there and wanting to, yeah, it's just, it looks interesting. It'll be great to see the footage because, yeah, I mean, we're all confined to our own, Melbourne, our own little areas at the moment. I'm kind of getting a little bit sick of my loop, so I'm just mixing it up. And I'm actually forcing myself to, as a runner who's a little bit OCD in terms of just doing the same loops, trying to mix it up a bit, go different ways within the 5K radius, obviously. But, yeah, varying the course. And, yeah, I'm knowing now that you've had this on the GoPro, yeah, I'm really keen to see how it all went. And yeah, taking the scenery as well. I'll get popcorn out for that one.
Yes, you need to. No, it's not that good. It's an amazing place to run. It's pretty quiet. It is good for a session. There's a couple of good hills in there. We'll have to, when we can get out of this 5K bubble, we'll have to tee up a run around there, because it hasn't been open to the public for. Oh, it's pretty recently open to the public, so it's quite a new addition to the Mornington Frankston area. Yeah.
Sure, there'll be a statue down there at some point. Let's say there'll be a statue going up there with you. You want to see us?
Yeah, if you keep pumping out the CRs. With this sort of 60-minute time, I was debating on whether to chuck the 4%ers on or not.
Yeah.
I decided that I'd make a quick shoe change. Mm. Because everything I've been doing has been just in the heavies or like in the peg turbos or sort of runners that I know that I can do just a casual, easy recovery run in, as well as hit a bit of a tempo work. I decided this time, because I'd been a bit flat last week, that I wanted to get a bit of pop in this run. So I chucked the 4% as well into the bush, because I mean, I was down in Frankston. So
be careful, there's a few listeners in that area, mate.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
But how are you getting your head around these? Because I know personally, warm ups, I'm a slow out the gate, so I like to cruise into it, and then I'll change my shoes and do two or three strides, but I'm still now a bit more conscious. Like, this is a 27-minute session, so you got in your warm up and you ditched the shoes, and then it was a real quick pit lane sort of change for the shoes.
Yeah, it was. So I warmed up, I think I cut it down to about 13 minutes. And then, yeah, quick change of the shoes, did two strides, jogged back after the strides, and then straight into it. There was no fluffing about.
Yeah.
And then I knew I was pushed for time once I finished. So I rolled straight into the warm down, did the warm down in the 4%ers, and I think I only did maybe 7 minutes warm down. Cause I knew that, yeah, I was definitely pressed for time by the time, yeah, you do those couple of strides, change of shoes and get into the session. So yeah, and on the same, like I'd prefer to have to be able to do that 20 minutes, because it takes a little while for the body to warm up. And I guess that was another good thing about this session, is I know that that 3-minute effort, I didn't have to, and I knew I wasn't going to, because I'd probably find it hard just off a short warm up to I knew I didn't have to hit a real hard pace straight off the bat. So I think that's why this is actually a really good session for this time, because you're not going to be hitting a 3K, 1500, whatever pace. But to know that you can hit a half marathon for the first 3-minute effort, I think that's ideal for this 60-minute block.
I know with some of my athletes, and we're sort of managing this in that some of our sessions are ranging from 15 to 25 minutes, and we're kind of, depending on the athlete, there's some of us who we've just wound back, even in that session, we might do two of them just to bring it back so they can actually warm up and don't feel rushed. Because, for some of the athletes, it's, age being a factor, or niggles, or carrying, things that have happened in the past. It's like, we're not going to take the risk in shortening a warm up for the sake of getting an extra rep in. So I think it's on a case by case kind of basis for a lot of athletes in this time. And, in other instances, we're just sort of going with, progression runs, or, if I know a couple of other athletes are doing maybe a little bit on the exercise bike at home beforehand, or yeah, so we're just being a bit innovative and changing up a few things. And look at the, and we had a good chat, we'll go into it with Lauren a bit later, but yeah, just making sure that, you know, we don't put too much emphasis on these sessions rather than getting through the overall weeks and just staying on the path.
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, that's what you got to be looking at, isn't it, at the moment, is, yeah, what's going to suit the individual. And yeah, I've been setting quite a few progression runs because I think, yeah, it's a fun way to go about the 60 minutes. And I've seen on Strava, I think people have just been doing progression runs when they don't even mean to. It's just, oh, I want to go out for 60 minutes and they'll start out. And I think you did one the other day where you sort of started out with 15 minutes easy, then worked up first 10 minutes and then pushed into the last 15 maybe even. And yeah, just something like that where you don't have to stop and change the shoes or do any strides in the middle. And I just think it's a feel a little more natural way to go out and run too.
And if you look at it through a different lens of just that freedom of, okay, this run, I'm not setting steadfast goals around the reps. I'm just going to go and for 10 minutes, I'm going to feel good here. I'm going to push a little bit more and then I'm going to pull back here. And I'm kind of enjoying that. And then there's some moments on these loops that I'm doing where I get to like 50 minutes and I'm like, oh, is this going to be tight or not? Like, I'm always fine, but then I start to like have these little anxiety attacks. I'm like, oh, geez, I better get rolling. And then I'm like, oh, I'm well and truly in the range. And then I have to do, you know, some small loops around the neighborhood just to clock up to near the 60 minutes, or I just call it at 55 minutes. But I think it is sort of kind of interesting and as a runner to be confined a little bit more. To say, okay, you've got 60 minutes, just work within those range.
Yeah, and I mean, you can fit a lot in that 60 minutes. Well, exactly the same. I've had to make a few surges towards the back end of a run because I'm like, I'm pushing it to make it back home again. I shouldn't have done that extra loop of the court down, you know, down a few k's away because, yeah, this has meant that I'm hurting on this back end when it's meant to be a recovery run. But yeah, what are you thinking for your session tomorrow? Because we've had a few obviously drop on the socials. Run to PB 60 minute workouts can be done, and you've got a range of choices there. Have you any that sort of taken your fancy?
Yeah, I've been loving seeing everyone's different take on it. I know with the coaching group, we had the comp we talked about last week, and some more videos coming through. We've got Madeline Heiner dropping, that one's going to come out. We're recording this today on Friday, so that'll come out for people that want to look at that on the weekend. So I'm tossing up between Mads's workout's pretty interesting. It's three sets of 5 minute into like a 10K effort into a 30 second recovery and then a 30 second on. So there's 3 minute recovery and like three sets of that. So that to me is interesting because I really enjoy those 5 minute reps. So I've looked at that one. I'm really keen to check Tri Soaps out, especially because you've laid down the marker. And also, I think it'll be a good one, just like you mentioned, going through those, through the gears, through that half 10K right down into the, dialing into a bit of speed. And tell me, how tough is it coming off that 30 second into a 3 minute though?
Yeah. Buddy, 30 seconds goes pretty damn quick. Because, you've worked hard. You know, you want to try to get the pace up in that 1 minute, then backing off for 30 seconds. But, it sounds probably harder on paper than what it is because, for me, like the idea that I had was to hit around sort of that threshold-y, around half marathon-y pace for that 3 minute effort. So I feel like off that minute, like all my muscle fibers are firing quite strongly that when I back it off for that 3 minutes, even though you've only had 30 seconds recovery, like you're almost recovering during that 3 minute effort itself because you're not pressing it so hard. As hard as it sort of seems, like you think it far out, 30 seconds goes quick and it does, but you're not going back into an all out sort of 3 minute effort. I wouldn't be too scared about about those, and it does hurt. But for me, the time went so quick, and I think it is because you're constantly changing pace. You know, I think that's why that 27 minutes like felt like a bit of a blink in the eye. All of a sudden, I was like, oh, I've only got like one rep to go, and that's the thing as well. It's you can if you can tell yourself it's just three reps. Yeah, once you got through two reps, you know, you're like, oh, I've just got one rep left, even though, you know, it's 9 minutes of work. But if you can mentally tell yourself just one rep to go, it's much more manageable.
Did you load it into the garment? Like, did you set it all up? Because I'm thinking, knowing me, I'll get confused with the ons, offs, and yeah. So did you have that set up in the garment?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't have it loaded. I thought about it the night before, and then I'm just gonna roll with it. And if I stuff the times up, I stuff the times up. I'm not too stressed about it. It was a bit of clock watching out there, making sure I was going. There was a few math calculations running through.
And holding a GoPro at the moment. So yeah, but well done with the multi-skilling.
I haven't looked at so much about that footage yet. It might be rubbish.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, and I guess getting back to what you're saying about that, yeah, 5K, 10K, like these 60-minute workouts are perfect for that 5K, 10K block. And I think for me, my own running, yeah, that's all I'm focusing on. A lot of the athletes I'm coaching are in the same boat. It's like, well, there isn't any marathons or half marathons on the go at the moment, obviously. And it's good time to dial into that. Even, you know, I've got an athlete who's going to go and pump out a 10 hot lap of the 10 at the end of kind of this 6-week period. There's a bit of a goal, you know, a few people doing some laps around Princess Park as a goal. So yeah, these sessions over 60 minutes are perfect for that, you know, anywhere from up to 10K. And, you know, and I think, and an athlete that I recorded just yesterday, Lauren Dass, and we had a really good chat about what we've done with her training over the last, and she's actually just, and you'll hear that, she's all essentially in a border town in metro and regional Melbourne and Victoria, I guess. She's been in that phase of, okay, there isn't a marathon. We were originally looking at Melbourne Marathon, but now we've dialed it back to have a crack at a couple of 10Ks, and absolutely smashed it with her run on the weekend.
Yeah, before her run, you mentioned that she was going well, and yeah, you had the pumping up her tires a bit to bring, you know, so you put the pressure on her. But yeah, she really lifted for the moment and smashed out the 41-minute 10K, I think, which was a big PB, and I think she even got a 5K PB on the way. So yeah, you must have been absolutely stoked with that
performance. Yeah, it was really satisfying to see it because she actually got the 5K PB back when we were doing the Runs PB virtual races back in April when we were thinking, oh yeah, this will be a few virtual runs and then we'll be back to, you know, business as usual. But here we are still doing time trials and you know, virtual runs. But yeah, she ran that PB then, and then she went out and split it in her 10K on the weekend. So that was huge. I mean, Loz is, she's a pleasure to coach. I mean, she actually started back in 2018. You know, we had a campaign for Melbourne Marathon and ran a PB there. And then she's had some time off, having young Edwin, who just turned one on the... Yeah, it's really exciting when you get to go on a journey with an athlete like this. And it was great to sort of hear her insights as well on how it all unfolded.
Awesome. Well, yeah, let's throw to it.
Today, I've got a special guest with me. It's Lauren Dass. Welcome back to the Better With Running podcast, Lauren.
Thanks, Zach.
Good to have you back on. Yes, it's good to have you back. Some of the loyal listeners, or maybe some of the listeners that have endured the last 20-odd episodes we've had with the Better With Running podcast might remember Lauren from way back in episode 2. She jumped on with myself and Maddie, and we were just, that was back when we had the Run to BB 5K virtual run over the weekends. And that was in April when we were going through the changes with this, with obviously the restrictions and and lack of races. And I remember back then you ran 20:56 for the five. You remember back then that virtual run you did then?
Yeah, it really feels like a very long time ago now. I think we're all in a bit of a time warp, but yeah, even just, you know, with the change of seasons, it feels like so very long ago.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I wanted to get you back on because we've had obviously a challenging few months with changes with, you know, races sort of obviously being canned and our plans for a few other events that kind of went by the wayside. And I know, we ended up targeting at 10K and we've had a really good couple of months block in there, including one attempt back in July. And then we went again on the weekend. So I wanted to get you on and share with the listeners, obviously, how you've been tracking. But I guess firstly, and we set this call up and you said, oh, I'm going to have to drive up a hill and get a better reception. Whereabouts are you actually based?
So I'm in Kinglake West, which is a pocket of houses, basically, and a general store and a stock feeds, fairly close to Kinglake town. I'm actually not that far from Melbourne. I'm within, I think it's about 5 kilometres radius of the start of the actual lockdown border. But yeah, for all intents and purposes, and particularly as far as Telstra's concerned, I am definitely rural.
Yeah, well, the reception's coming through okay, but yeah, it's working from home and there's, I guess up your way, internet is struggling a bit with the extra people on there. But I guess it must be strange because you, like you said, you're pretty much in a border town for Metro Melbourne that's going through this enforced restrictions around 6 minutes of exercise and a curfew at 8 o'clock, and you're still getting out and lapping it up and doing a bit more.
Yeah, I'm incredibly conscious of how fortunate I am. And I ran at 8 o'clock last night and we may as well have a curfew. It is so quiet here. It's, you know, it's fairly quiet at the best of times, but it was very eerie. No cars on the main road or anything like that, which is actually kind of nice. But it's very interesting because the people that are out and about, you know, the forest is actually as busy as it ever was. So I'm fairly well sticking to the roads at the moment.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, it's completely different down here in Melbourne where, you know, people are hitting the trails for sure because they've got that opportunity to do something. But and so I want to wind it back towards this 10K that we were talking about earlier and that two time trials. And I guess we really wanted to, you know, when we spoke over the phone about the changes in COVID and changes around racing and training and not having these set goals that we had in place. And I guess off the back of that 5K, we really wanted to focus in on that 10K. And I remember, you know, back in June, there was, some emails going around and we thought, let's even look at, because back then Melbourne Marathon was actually also on the cards. And I remember you were talking about maybe doing it whether it was going to go ahead A or B, do it as a time trial. I think we had to curb that one as well, didn't we?
Yeah, I've been nicknamed Cassandra a bit in the past for always seeing doom. So I was anxious a long time ago about Melbourne and had grand plans that maybe we could get a run to PB group together to do something, you know, around Albert Park or somewhere else. And yeah, I mean, I had no expectation that it would be clamped down to the point that we couldn't even get together to do that. Given October's still technically outside that bubble, but I don't think we'll be in a position to organise, you know, medium-sized groups by then.
Yeah, because I know back then we were all optimistic that we can get back together and do some things like that, and it's certainly been a challenge getting going again. But you've been, to your credit, I mean, you're a very good trainer. You're consistent, and you've been able to string together the week on week. And I think having these time trials has given you something to focus on, and it probably from a coaching standpoint allowed me to periodize it a bit, so we could taper off, we could really freshen up. And I know your July crack, you were a little bit nervous about that one, because I guess time trials can get the nerves going a little bit, just because you can knock together the sessions, but then you have to put it on the line. I guess it adds that another level. And I think we both agree that it's a good practice for when races do open up. And that 10K you ran. And the 10K, you did that. I'm looking back at it. And remember, did it on an oval? Do you remember that one? You want to talk through about 10K?
Yeah. So it's not a running track. It's the local, it's actually the local bushfire place of last resort. And it's a smallish, it's not quite a full-size footy oval, but no goalposts. So I was actually running around the outside of that on it's dirt. So it had gone to quite slippery slush in the rain. And that was really mentally testing. I know I'm not the kind of person that runs in circles very well. I don't enjoy time trials at all. It's all of the nerves of a race with none of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So just even getting through that was satisfying. And I know I technically had 8K on the program, but
yes.
If I was going to run for 8 kilometres around an oval,
yeah,
I just couldn't bear to stop there and not really have anything to benchmark for myself.
Because your time, you're 40.
Of course, if it had gone badly.
Yeah. Because I'm going to say, your time, you ran 44.01, from what I'm looking at officially.
Yep.
There was a little bit of a incident in that one as well, wasn't there? A clock.
I lost. I slipped over twice, and each time I actually stopped my watch because I thought, this is a time trial, not a race. If you've done anything to yourself, it's not worth fighting it. So each time I just stopped and went, no, I'm not. It's soft, slippery mud. I didn't do myself any mischief other than bit of dirt on my backside, and just picked myself up and kept going. Then so 44.01's the elapsed time. Didn't try and cut myself any corners there. Let it roll.
Yeah. It was still 10 seconds faster than your old PB. And admittedly, that was off a treadmill from memory.
Treadmill. Yeah. So that was a pretty colloquially speaking downhill treadmill, with... what the Garmin sort of recorded in for perpetuity is probably quite different to what I actually ran.
Yeah. And I had known your training leading up to that. And I think the conditions doing it on that course, and it was a really solid run. And I think it did give you the impetus to sort of really go, okay, let's zero in now that we kind of knew off the back of that, we weren't going to have that opportunity to start to up the mileage and look at a marathon. We penciled in another crack at this 10K, and I think my advice was to probably get off the mud and try and do it on a road course or do it somewhere that's a bit more favourable. And you had a crack at that on the weekend, and a big result that came through. Do you want to tell us what actually went down? Hey, and firstly, you changed the shoes as well. You went with the Saucony Endorphin Pros. Or Saucony, as they're telling us to call it now.
there was one pair left in my size floating around, and I decided I needed to have them. And look, if nothing else, I had to get on the roads, because otherwise, all jokes about time trials aside, otherwise it wouldn't be valid if I was trying to do this on a track.
But there's
a bit of a loop street, street that goes up and has a loop and comes back, and it's just under 2 kilometres around. So it's not GPS friendly or unfriendly. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's a rise and a fall in it. And I've discovered I actually quite like undulating courses because I can grit my teeth through the uphill and then just push with everything I have through the down. And that variation in speed breaks it up, makes it easier for me mentally. Mm. And I actually thought I'd blown it big time because I had a massive positive split in the one I did on the oval.
Yes.
And I thought I'd blown it big time because as I started off, the second K came through sub four.
Mm.
And the first K had been about 4:13. I thought, oh, I've cooked myself here. I'm in a lot of trouble. I just kept telling myself, if you really mess this up, you can just leave it on private on Strava and say you didn't run that day. It'll be fine. The only person to know will be you, and you'll forgive me. But I was on a purely downhill kilometer or almost downhill kilometer when that happened. So I sort of hung onto that and then just kept going. I ended up even splitting, which was really surprising. Ran 41:40 and managed to not quite as one of my splits, but within that run a 5 kilometer period in 20:40, which was really, you know, I'd made the comment to you after the last time trial when I did my Sunday run the next day and I just felt fine. And I realized I had left a lot in reserve. I had not put it all on the track. So I knew I'd had more to give, and I knew that a lot of that limiting factor was the time trial environment. And it was really satisfying to be able to leave a lot more behind and actually just grit in and see something that I wouldn't have thought was really possible, you know, at any time, let alone, you know, year after having a child. So
there were so many exciting takeaways for me seeing that. And in this environment, you know, the build up, it's been challenging, as I've said, and just the ability to, just kind of look at, okay, I ran 20:50 odd in the previous, then to go and do that and basically split it in a 10K. Yeah, you ran 4:10s for the whole 10K. It was, and I remember the session we did. We did 4x a K beforehand, you know, on the Tuesday, and you know, rolling sort of 4:10s in there. And I think you were pretty confident that something good was going to happen. But again,
after that session. I mean,
yeah,
the weather was terrible when I ran that 4x a K. Mm. And I did keep telling myself, well, you managed it. I had layers. I had a beanie on, a massive polar fleece jacket and a vest over the top, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it was rainy and quite breezy. So I did know that the weather would have been difficult, but I really felt like I was redlining to hit the paces.
Yeah.
And thought, weather aside, like the weather's not going to be great on Saturday. And I was lucky. I actually had a period of fairly reasonable weather. But I think, this is not going to be easy. Mm. This is not going to go well.
So yeah.
4:10s average was way above and beyond what I thought would have been possible.
Yeah, I'm actually reading back through some comments on Thursday. I think we were maybe talking you back in. I was probably talking you back into it. To ensure that, you know, it was all going to come out and it was all going to be fine. And even and looking at your warm-up, you mentioned that you said I barely could move warming up, started jogging at 6 minutes, didn't think I could move, you know. And I look back and I know from years of races that some of my warm-ups have been I don't remember a lot of them, but they always, you can have days and days before sessions where you're warming up and you just, I don't know how I'm going to be able to go today. Like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to hold any pace quicker than this 6 minute K. So it's, again, it was great practice for us to sort of go through that, even go through the wave of emotions through a taper week. And I was stoked to see that result come up on the board.
Yeah, me too. I was, yeah. I with the warm-up, I started jogging around that same oval because I left my car there so that I could get to this loop without completely tiring myself out jogging to it. And I was, I actually deleted, I didn't save from my Garmin when I started warming up because I was at over 6 minute Ks and feeling really tired trying to hit that, and just took myself back to the car, stopped, discarded the activity and just stopped and thought about it, and then decided, okay, just try again. And just that mantra of, you don't have to record this anywhere. You don't, you know, you can just let this happen and see what happens. And I think not having to put that pressure on myself, or realizing I didn't actually have to put any pressure on myself, helped.
Yeah.
But it was so hard to overcome the psychology of an appall. And even when I did record the warm-up, it was, you know, 2.5 kilometers at 5.5 minute Ks, and it just felt, it just felt terrible. And I think part of it is because you are, you know, it's hindsight, but you're in a taper week. You're not running as much. It is taking that little bit longer to get rolling and get the neurological connections back in place. Because even though your legs are fresh, your brain isn't.
It takes
good learning.
It is. And it takes courage to do these time trials, because I know, you know, like you touched on, it's just you're putting yourself out there, even though, like, at the end of the day, it really, it you want to do well. And if it doesn't go well, we can do it again in another 4 weeks, you know. And, you know, but it is good to, it's finding that balance of, you know, it's good to have the nerves, good to care, you know, to have that level of care that you want it to work out, and to take the plunge and do it and put it on the line. I think we're getting better at it, and I think it's going to really put us in good stead when these races open up. Because, you know, I sort of said to you after that, so you're doing that solo around the, you know, around the block. Yeah, you throw in the other elements of racing, which will come back at some level. I'm not sure when, but when it comes back, you'll have the atmosphere. You pin the number on the, you know, the chest. It just, it adds another level where, you know, you can really go after it and get in a pack. I said to you, even like, I'd happily come, you know, when I'm allowed to come out and pace, you know, back, go at 40 minute pace. And it's a hell of a lot easier when you have someone around you. I can tell you that from just doing sessions and time trials myself, like, you know, throwing that in there as well. It's exciting what's ahead.
Yeah. And I rarely run with other people, very rarely run with other people unless it is a race. So to be able to look forward to doing something where that you do get that extra psychological boost of having other people around to just benchmark and keep rolling with it, it'll be really exciting to see what I can do then.
And I just wanted to, and I think some of the listeners might have watched you on the live stream that we had recently with Jess Trengrove and Brady, and we talked about the changes with parenthood, you know, running as a parent now, and I guess now with the, you know, and I saw Edwin is turn one, was it yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a ride for you, and then throwing in COVID as well. Have you got some advice, some further advice for other, you know, people in the Run to PB community, I guess, going in the same boat, you know, both juggling parent life and also, you know, running as it is now, particularly with some of the areas that are in, you know, restrictions and having to, I guess, yeah, manage their time even more now.
Yeah. At the moment, my advice would be, whenever you've got a session, I'm the kind of person that puts a bit of pressure on myself in with a session. Anytime you have a session and you're anxious about it, go out and give yourself permission to abort the session in favor of an easy run once you finish your warm-up, because if what you need psychologically is the joy and flow of an easy run, you can come back to your running, your fitness isn't disappearing because you missed a session, you're still out there, you're still putting time on your feet. That said, the rush you get after completing a session is really good as well, but be kind and give yourself permission. And the other thing I'll say, I said this on the live stream, and it's something I heard Jared Ward say, the American marathoner, you're going to drop balls. And he wasn't talking about a COVID environment when he said this, but you are going to drop balls when you're working, when you have children, when you have training. You will drop a ball, but don't drop the same ball 2 days running. Yeah. And that's what matters. So every day, you know, it may be that you miss your training one day. It is okay. One day is not the end of the world. We don't have a race coming up. I know there's I know that we've got London coming up, but not for the likes of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I'm really looking forward to that from a motivational point of view and something to watch and cheer for. But yeah, just you cannot be as harsh on yourself. You shouldn't be harsh on yourself anyway, but particularly at the moment, you just cannot be so harsh on yourself. It is strange, uncharted waters, and we just need to put one foot in front of the other. And I suppose the other, you know, big coach in the world, Tom Schwartz, you know, keep the ball rolling. That's what matters. Just keep the ball rolling in some way. Absolutely. And perfection and fine tuning is great, and do as much as you can, but it is not of dire importance right now. It's icing on the cake.
100%. Yeah, you've nailed it there. Because as a coach in these last few months, it is really about that 100%. Like, you need to. I've been at a lot of athletes saying, look, I'm totally fine. If you're not feeling the session today, don't do it. You know, just take a day off, relax, do something else, unwind. It's not the be all and end all. And, you know, I think people, you know, athletes, it's stressful as well. There's a lot of stress going on outside of that run. And, you know, you add that on top of that anxiety of, oh, I've got to get my session in as well. Like, you know, I'd rather someone be able to keep running through this and just getting out the door, even if it's dropping a couple of days a week, so we can be healthy and maintain and still get running, than pushing the envelope. Because it, like you said, there isn't racing at the moment, and that's fine. Like, we can just take running for what it is and enjoy the time we have out there. And it's there is plenty of time down the track to get a bit more serious and, you know, be a little bit harder on yourself if you don't get out the door. But right now, it's that mental health and well-being is paramount, I think. So you've nailed it with those tips as well.
I know that there's, and you know, I'm 38, and it is very easy to sometimes think I'm about to fall off physical fitness, physical peak cliff. But you look at Australia's current two top qualifiers for the Olympics on the female side, and that is not what's playing out. Like, we all have time. We can all put together a new PB going forward. We are not all beyond it. And, you know, from the men's side, you look at the US marathon trials with Abdi, you know, I know that that's an anxiety that a lot of people have, is I'm going to be too old by the time I can race again. And it's just not the case. Yeah. But you need to look after yourself while you can't race, so that you're not injured when we can.
Mm. And I was having
a conversation. And I just need to take my own advice.
Yeah, look, we all do. And like, I was having a conversation earlier today with another athlete about it. And it's, you know, for some people in Melbourne, it's like, oh, it's 6 weeks, but it's actually 6 weeks where you're buying a bit of time and saying, well, okay, I've got 6 weeks to really focus in on some of the areas that I probably don't, you know, really give enough attention to right now, whether it's your core or activation. And it's like, okay, I can do that at home. I can get it all done. There's a 6 weeks. So it's like, okay, let's use this as a positive and just extend the time out before races start. Because sometimes races, come on the calendar and they come around too quick and we're all like, oh, I wish I had another, you know, I wish I had more time to get ready. It's yep. like, well, okay, you've got the time now. So yeah, it's, yeah, I think, and from us speaking from a run to PB community point of view, I think just seeing people get around each other in these times has been really, really great. And just other runners, even on Strava and around the place, you know, supporting each other. I think that's really important as well.
Hugely. It's one of the beautiful things about a running group of non-elite runners, but who are very dedicated, is we've all come up through the paces. Very few of us were running as juniors and putting it back together. I know there's a few of us who are, but very few of us did. And we all know how it feels to trip through the different milestones that we're all covering. And, you know, there's plenty of guys and girls who've broken 20 for 5K who are hugely supportive of me with my slower paces. And it's, and equally, you know, seeing people breaking other barriers that I've previously broken and going, I remember how that felt when I first hit that. And, you know, that shared enjoyment and that shared celebration is just it's just wonderful. And I'm not sure how easy it would have been to get through this period if I didn't have that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a real leveler in terms of running as well. I think, you know, we all are going out there, what doesn't matter what pace you're doing that workout is, you're out there, you're giving what you have on the day. And, you know, I truly believe that. So I don't, yeah, and I think, yeah, the community is really helping a lot of people at the moment. So, yeah, and I thank you for coming on today just to share your news about your PB and obviously just sort of give us some of the listeners a bit more of an update, which has been great.
Thank you.
Mate, that was another great chat. Always good to get a bit of a peek behind the curtains with the athletes and see how they're getting things done and staying positive and yeah, being such a good contributor to the running community. I really like seeing Woz's socials when they pop up. Always interesting and it's fantastic to hear that.
Yeah, she's got a great time. And the takeaway is that little discussion we had around, I guess, just taking that, and we were talking about it earlier in the episode, a bit just about taking the runs for what they are. And if there's days where you're not up to it or you're not feeling this other stresses in life, just to have the day off and relax and regroup. And I think, across the whole community, I think it's been great to see everyone sort of supporting other runners. And it goes, you know, we're playing obviously in a few border issues at play with, you know, this impact where, you know, it's much bigger than just running. You know, you've got lives being lost and, you know, an impact on jobs, the economy, and, you know, these events that, you know, we get a little bit like, oh, I wish that this was on. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, there's some real people in, you know, a lot. Whether our event goes ahead or not, you know, it's there's other bigger sort of issues that are at play. And yeah, and even small businesses and the running industry as a whole, like just in that micro world of running or the running industry, I guess, it's people are really doing it tough. And I look at, you know, the running company, the guys that we hear from Sammy and we'll hear from him a bit later in Shoe Chat. Yeah, they're impacted here in Melbourne. Stores having to close down and they're all online now, and you know, there's a lot of our runners and the running community really supports the running company as a whole, you know, not just the Yarraville. You've got the other locations, you know, Julian Spence down in Ballarat, the stores in Lilydale, Clifton Hill, Geelong. Like, they're doing great things in that running community, but now they're, you know, in that position where they are having to sort of close the doors and, you know, people have to shop online. So look, we're obviously trying to do what we can as out there and support them. And in, you know, we've put a link in the show notes for them, and yeah, we'll try and cross promote them in our socials as best we can.
Yeah. It's important, isn't it, to try to keep these businesses running at the moment, and try to help them out. I mean, it must be a stressful time for a lot of people, and it is a tough time. And yeah, anything we can do to try to help support them, I guess, is so worthwhile. And yeah, I caught up with Sammy for some more shoe chat, and yeah, so that was a great to get him on board and have a bit of a discussion around some minimalist and maximalist shoes and some of the ideas about what I could do to help with a couple of niggles I've got around. And yeah, he's very insightful, and yeah, if you want to get onto, yeah, well, so he's at the Yarraville store there, yeah, knows his stuff, and I'm sure he'd be happy to answer any questions.
Definitely, yeah, because there's a lot, like, just seems I see there's so many different shoes out there now, so many options, and this minimalist versus maximalist, that yeah, even for a runner like myself who's been around for a long time, I used to just go to my usual go-tos, but now I'm sort of exploring completely different shoes and you know, getting a different rotation in and really changing things up. And I think it's a great thing, this innovation. And I know we've had the rise of the super shoes and all the rest, but across the board in different areas we're seeing, you know, and there's you know, even when races kick off again on the track, you know, you've got new track spikes that are coming in that are giving you more support. So it's exciting time in the shoe industry, no doubt. And it's just, yeah, it'll be great when we can get out there and race a bit more and really put them to test.
Yeah. So, and I think, like, if you are, got any questions, like I've hit up, like Sammy, obviously, and Brad and Renee at the Yarraville store, and Julian, Moose, Spence and Bree at Ballarat, they've all been so helpful in giving me any guidance around what might help, and they've been able to chase down shoes if they haven't got them available. And yeah, they've like always supported me, so I feel like I should repay the favor and support them too.
For sure, yeah. You know, you have that trust with you know, specialty running stores like this, where they're runners, they're in the trenches, they know what it's like, and they just go above and beyond. You know, I've messages back and forth, and then there's photos, and like that's the sort of service you get, as opposed to I'll just jump on and I'll go to, you know, XYZ department or, you know, store that's a wider label that doesn't actually really have that invested interest in, from what I see, the runners, the true runners. So yeah, and I'm looking forward to this episode, mate, because I always learn something from when you guys get on and talk shoes. So yeah, I think without further ado, let's throw to it.
Well, here we are back on the line with Sammy the Shoe Dog McLean, here to give you a rundown on all things shoes, a bit about what's current, and looking a bit about the differences between our minimalist and maximalist shoes. So Sammy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, morning Matty. Good to be back for another episode. I saw you and Zaka have hit, I think, is it 20 episodes on the podcast? So
yeah,
congrats there.
It is.
It's gone quick.
It has, really has.
No, it has.
Yep. No, and you've been a big feature on the podcast, and because the listeners have really taken to what you've helped them with around their shoes. So you've done an amazing job to help with that.
Yeah, cheers. No, it's good to hear. Thanks.
And so Sammy, been having a look on your Strava and in between a few Zwift challenges on the bikes and tearing through some rubber. I've actually saw a couple of pictures of a couple of new shoes that you've been trying, the Saucony Speed, and along with the New Balance Prism. So how have you found those two new shoes?
Yeah, two very different shoes, but it's always cool to try some new shoes. So the Saucony Speed is like a kind of like a sister shoe to that, the Saucony Pro, which is the super shoe. So we touched on last week on the episode when we were talking about those second tier fast training shoes. So that's where the Speed sort of fits into that category. So yeah, no, I've been having a lot of fun in that. It's like sometimes those carbon shoes don't feel that great when you're running kind of slower in them. Like, I mean, obviously they're intended purpose is to go fast in them, and they do that well, but sometimes they don't feel great underfoot when you're just jogging. But the speed definitely just feels like really enjoyable at all paces. So yeah, no, I'm loving that. It just makes you want to get out the door and have a run. And the other shoe you mentioned there, the New Balance Prism. So yeah, this is kind of a new concept by New Balance. I suppose what they've done with this shoe is they're trying to cater, I suppose, for those runners that might require a bit of support in a shoe. So let's just say you're a runner that's got a daily trainer in your rotation, like something like a Keanu or an Asics GT, maybe a Saucony Guide, like those shoes that offer some level of support. This the Prism has like a little bit of a medial post on it, so it's almost like a fast shoe option for runners that might need that. So it's an interesting concept. Like I personally don't need that in a shoe, but running in it, I couldn't really feel it. So it might be a shoe that's better tested out on someone that does require that in a shoe. But yeah, look, I think it's good when brands kind of look at things like this and go, well, you know, is this a concept we could develop more and cater for more runners?
What sort of sessions then would you, or what sort of runs would you, would they be sort of used around?
Yeah, I mean, like those, you know, faster shoe options that we were talking about last week, that's where this shoe would probably cater for those types of runners.
Yep.
Like what we're seeing a little bit of a trend now from some brands where they're not really calling their supportive stability shoes like those types of shoes. They're calling them more like guidance shoes. So by guidance, I suppose what we're alluding to is that the shoe's just giving you like a little bit of correction maybe with the alignment of your foot and so forth with your foot strike, but not interfering too much. So you know, it's another kind of new word, this whole guidance type thing, and I reckon that's where the Prism is trying to fill that category of it's giving you some guidance but not kind of in a really kind of heavy structured way.
Yep. I like the name too.
It looks really cool, and it's a nice fitting shoe. Like as soon as I put it on, you know, it felt a lot like some of the other models that New Balance are doing at the moment, like the TNC. Like it really felt a lot like that. It'll be interesting to see if it kind of takes off. But I think it's a good thing that brands are at least trying to give those runners that require some support some faster options with their choices also.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. Absolutely.
So
today's chat, we've fielded some questions from some of the listeners, and there's been quite a few talking about and asking about the difference between sort of the minimalist and the maximal shoes. And so that's what we decided to have a bit of a chat about today.
Yeah, I mean, it always creates a little bit of debate, the whole minimalist shoes and maximalist shoes and that. So I thought it'd be a good conversation to have. And I think, you know, I suppose like we were chatting off air and saying that, you know, really the idea of this shoe chat podcast is like to give our Run to PB members and our listeners just like a bit of help and some tips and knowledge around how they can use their shoes. You know, like I think there's plenty of platforms out there that do shoe reviews and, you know, they do that really well. So, you know, we touch on that kind of stuff, but I think if we can give our listeners just, you know, some knowledge around, you know, their footwear choices and so forth, then, you know, that's good. So I think, yeah, I think that this conversation we're going to have probably will help with that. So yeah, looking forward to having a chat about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to, yeah, listening to some of the information around this, because it's kind of something that I've sort of gone through between minimalist and maximalist shoes. And yeah, sort of maybe even get some ideas about updating my shoe rotation. But yeah, well, yeah, the first thing is looking at explaining what a minimalist and a maximalist shoe is, and yeah, a few specs on what the differences are between them.
Yeah, easy. I mean, I suppose like in a really simple way, you could just describe the two as the minimalist shoe being just less shoe and a maximalist shoe being more shoe. Like that's been really simple, but that's an easy way to explain it. Then I suppose you could go, well, a minimalist shoe just has like less intervention in the shoe, and a maximalist shoe kind of has more intervention, you know, so more to it, less to it. Some of the, I suppose, the specs and the traits that you might see in a minimalist shoe, like, you know, generally speaking, they'll have a zero drop. So, you know, from the heel to the toe, it's just, it's the same kind of shoe. You know, often they'll have like a fairly wide toe box. They'll be very light and just as obvious as it sounds, just very minimal with what the shoe is. So the upper will be very kind of thin and simple. Whereas the, you know, some of the traits of the maximalist shoe, you generally have like a really high stack. So plenty of foam underfoot, plenty of like depth from the ground to the, you know, to the top of the footbed. Normally a fairly kind of wide platform. You know, they're often quite rigid type shoes. And just like a lot of shoe. So yeah, I reckon that probably kind of covers, you know, in a simple way, kind of the differences between the two.
Yeah. So if you were in the shop and you were fitting someone for a minimalist shoe and a maximalist shoe, so what would you look at? Like, why would you do that?
I mean, let's just maybe use the example of like the same runner that comes in. What's an injury we can look at? Like, let's just say a runner came in and that they were suffering from some Achilles tendinopathy. So, you know, you walk in the door, the Achilles might be a little bit kind of grumbly to the point where like you can get out the door and go for a run, but you're a little bit sore there. There's some awareness of the Achilles. You know, you're having some of that like morning soreness that you get sometimes the day after a run. So that's where we could look at like a shoe, like a Hoka. So a maximalist shoe where, you know, like one of the key traits of that shoe is it has what we call a meta rocker in the midsole. So that just enables us to kind of offload the Achilles and the calf and the heel a little bit. So we're just, you know, taking away some of the pressure and impact from the tissue there and kind of just, you know, allowing you to kind of move a little bit more forward through your gait and get off that area of your foot strike. So, you know, that's where we could use a maximalist shoe to help someone almost get back to daily running and almost full load with their running. And then, like, if we use the example of that runner again, you know, let's just say they came back to the shop in 3 or 4 months' time. You know, they're running mostly pain-free. Maybe they're ready to start some faster sessions. We could kind of introduce like a minimalist shoe in like a really controlled way. So, you know, we could just get them to run down to the local oval like in their normal shoes. They could then throw on the minimalist shoe and just like even just do like 5 strides in the minimalist shoe. So, you know, it's just going to make them work that calf complex a little bit more. It's going to load up the Achilles a bit more. But by doing it like in a really controlled and sensible way, we're kind of strengthening that part of their foot without the risk of injuring it. So I suppose, you know, what when we know what a shoe does, we can kind of almost manipulate it a little bit to get a benefit as well. So if we know that a minimalist shoe like should be avoided when like you've got Achilles issues, like we can kind of use that example to then, well, we can use that to, you know, strengthen that same area when the runner is, you know, in a better position with their training. Does that make sense to you, mate? Like,
yeah, it does. And it's kind of, for me at the moment, so I've, so obviously we're in Melbourne here in stage 4 lockdown. We're only allowed out exercise for 1 hour, so I've been I've been doing the hour most of the times in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I'll look at doing an Arvo jog. So I'll load the treadmill up, and so I've been jumping the treadmill for sort of 7-8 K, so 30-35 minutes, something like that. And my left Achilles has kind of got a bit grumbly. Like it's not sore, but it's more the sheath actually on the side, and I've had issues with it a lot of times, and 10 years or something like that. And I think it's just from jumping on the treadmill. And it's, it's quite a bouncy sort of feel to it. And I've had a bit of a few research papers saying that, that treadmills, can cause, Achilles problems. So I guess like just thinking out loud, like I guess I could, potentially look at more of a maximalist shoe, to maybe offset that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, spot on. And that's, that's a really good example of, if you came into the shop, that's exactly where we would go. Okay, well, you're doing some doubles with your training. How can we utilize a shoe just to make those recovery runs or that second run, a little bit easier on the body. So yeah, like something like a Hoka would be a perfect example there, where we could just, offload that Achilles. That sounds like it's a little bit grumbly there, and just allow you to run a little bit more pain free. And hopefully by just, introducing that shoe and then adapting to it, your foot's going to get a good kind of adaptation to it, and hopefully some the benefits of how the Hoka would work there.
Yeah, that's good to know. I might look at purchasing a pair of Hokas, and
or the flip side is, like, if you felt like, in a safe way, you could go full circle and maybe, like, I mean, look, I could use myself as an example. Like, I've got some Nike Freeze at the moment. I'm not running in them, but I just walk the dogs in them. The dogs get a couple of walks a day. So I'm probably doing, let's say 30 minutes of walking in them each day. I reckon I've had them now for about 5 or 6 weeks. And like when I do like some of my ankle stability work and strengthening work and calf raises and that, I definitely feel like I've got a little bit stronger through that area. So look, I don't know if that's just, maybe if it is through the Nike Freeze or whether it's a bit of a placebo, I'm not sure. But you could probably look at both sides of the spectrum there and how you could look after that Achilles that you've got.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Like, it's not something that's preventing me from running. Like, I wake up in the morning, walk around, and it's fine. Like, it's like a really low grade kind of and it's not even sore. I just know that there's a bit, as you know, how you get that crepitus, like that bubbling on the side of Achilles. It's just got a little bit.
Yeah, I've had that.
I just obviously consciously not wanting to overdo it. And I just thought that maybe getting in a maximalist shoe might help with alleviating some of the pressure there.
The beauty of the maximalist shoes these days is, like, they're incredibly light. Like we always take them off the shelf and get the customer to hold them, because they often look at them and think, oh wow, they look really cumbersome and heavy. I don't want to wear that. And then you get them to hold it and it's like, oh my God, like, it's, they're incredibly light, which is good. So given like the types of shoes you're already in, like, we don't want to change things too much whenever we introduce a new shoe. Like last episode, we touched on the fact that you're in your Nike Pegs and your Nike Turbos. So we don't want your next update to be like really different to how they feel in weight and so forth. So the good thing about like a shoe like a Hoka is it's actually, it doesn't weigh much more than those shoes. So it's not going to be a massive change for you to include that into your rotation. So yeah, I reckon a Hoka could be your next purchase, Matty.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just got, from the running company Yarraville, I just got my Peg 37s. I haven't broken them in yet. But I'm looking forward to trying those.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon the other time when like a maximalist shoe can be quite useful is, you know, particularly when your Sunday long run, like if you're training for a marathon and you're getting well up over that 30K kind of duration.
Yep.
You know, sometimes that Monday morning run is just like, it's hard work. Like I reckon it's one of the hardest runs of the week, the Monday morning run. So, you know, again, that's where you could just throw on one of those really cushioned maximal shoes and it just, yeah, it just makes the run just feel, you know, just a little bit easier on the legs. Yeah. Because, I mean, the other thing we know about shoes is like that perceptual feel that we feel in the shoe is really important. So even though like a highly cushioned shoe doesn't actually mean there's less impact on the joints, if it does make us feel like it's, you know, it's helping us, then that's a good thing. So just by feeling soft underfoot and cushion, that's going to help us when we run.
Yep, that's a good idea. And then because some, like I've actually had hoppers in the past, but I haven't had a pair since I think the Claytons went out. Out of rate. And they, I noticed that the heel drop was quite small, and I'm used to, I guess, the pegs there, the heel drop on those. Or can you explain, I guess, what the heel drop is? And then, yeah, what, because I don't want to change, you know, obviously, if I'm going from a 7 mil, 8 mil, I think maybe the pegs are, to like a 3 or 4 mil in the hockers. What would you suggest there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. If someone was suffering from some type of like foot pathology issue that was, you know, calf related, Achilles related, that's where I think the drop of the shoe can be important. Look, I mean, I sometimes feel like runners do focus a little bit too much on, oh, that's an 8 mil drop and that's a 10 mil drop. And, you know, I can't run in the 8 mil because I always run in the 10. Whereas, you know, we're talking sometimes the difference really between like a thin sock and a thick sock, like that's what a couple mil can be. But yeah, so I suppose, you know, like when we are talking about a drop in the shoe, we're talking about the difference between the highest point of the shoe and the heel versus the lowest point of the shoe, which is up around the forefoot there. You know, like, I mean, often we talk about like a 10 mil drop or a 12 mil drop being like a positive thing for people that have had Achilles issues. But you could also argue that if that forces us more onto our kind of midfoot, forefoot when we run, maybe we're actually loading up the calf complex just as much. So, it's just an example of any time we're kind of changing or shifting load in our body, it's going to work somewhere else more as well. So, yeah, those high mil drop shoes don't necessarily always mean that you're going to be getting the benefit of offloading the calf and Achilles.
Yep. And now, that's good, because I use the some heel raises. I guess I just had them in for quite some time, and I guess my body's just adjusted to them, and it seems to be working. Like I've really had that many Achilles issues or that
niggles. I mean, when you look at when you look at the actual stack height though of those minimal shoes, like your foot's like kind of further off the ground, so that like even though like a Hoka will generally be about a 4 or 5 mil drop, you're still much higher off the ground than if you're in a traditional shoe that might have a 12 mil drop. So it's that higher stack midsole that's giving you that benefit there. So it doesn't really matter too much that the drop is actually less than maybe your daily trainer. Yeah.
I remember first putting on like this hockers ages ago, and I remember feeling like making the comment that I felt like I was running on clouds, like because of so much underneath my foot, and I think a lot of shoes are kind of I think the pegs have got a lot more to them these days than what they did when I first wore the Hokas.
Right across the board now in the industry, if you looked at the geometry of most shoes, if you looked at the stack height, they kind of all lean more towards the maximalist type end of the spectrum of shoes than the minimalist side. But the traits that they've got from the minimalist side would be that they're really light and quite, minimal with things like the upper and the laces and the heel counter and things like that. Yeah, so it's kind of like the brands are going, what are the positives of the minimalist shoes? What are the positives of maximal shoes? And kind of putting it into, you know, a lot of the offerings that are coming. I think I actually remember seeing you at Athletic Victoria races in your Hokas back when they weren't that popular. So yeah, it was interesting to see.
Yeah, I think I got laughed at a few times, to be honest. So I guess that links to the next question in regards to the running industry, including like podiatrists and physios and where they sit in regards to minimalist side of shoes or maximalist side of shoes for I guess their views on footwear.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think good podiatrists and good physios obviously will hopefully see the benefits in all types of shoes. And, you know, definitely the majority of the podiatrists that we work with at the shop, you know, they have a really good understanding of all the types of shoes and how they can benefit runners that they might be treating. Like I'd say maybe on a whole though that, you know, a big part of the podiatry industry is maybe a little bit more towards the minimalist side. And I can probably understand that because, like, when you look at the anatomy of the foot and so forth, like, it's a, you know, like, it's a flat structure. It's you know, like, that's kind of their area of expertise. So they probably feel over years and definitely, like, living in a Western society that we're probably interfered too much in the foot via shoes. You know, we do that like at a really young age. Like as soon as we buy our first pair of shoes as a kid, we're kind of interfering with the capacity of the foot in to some degree. So yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of like podiatrists probably feel that, you know, in an ideal world, we all probably should be able to walk around and run around in minimalist shoes, but we've just kind of interfered too much in that as, you know, through our journey as runners and just by, you know, as I said, getting our first pair of shoes and then our next pair of shoes and so forth. Yeah, I mean, a little bit off topic, but like my daughter, she's 7 months. So like, she's obviously not, she's not walking, but she's kind of starting to crawl. But when I hold her up and support her upper body and just let her feet kind of hang and she supports her legs, her kind of first reaction or intuition is like she really tries to plant her big toe into the ground, like that first metatarsal.
Yeah.
And like it's really interesting seeing, like, so obviously like she's never worn shoes yet. Like that's her first instinct, is to get that big toe into the ground to help support her. And that's really what we're trying to do. A big part of is when we hit the ground, when we run, like we want that big toe to act as almost like the lever to our foot strike. And, you know, that keeps us nice and stable. It keeps the alignment of our foot nice and stable. And therefore, you know, hopefully we're loading evenly through our gait. So to kind of answer that question about like where do the podiatrists sit with, you know, their views on shoes, you know, we probably take away some of that capacity of our big toe and that by putting too much shoe underfoot. I think in an ideal world it would be great if we could all get away with wearing minimalist shoes, because I think, you know, they kind of copy the anatomy of our foot. But yeah, over time, I think just there does become a need for maximalist shoes at some point. Yeah.
Especially like you said before, after, you know, if you've punched out a, you know, 30 plus K Sunday long run, and then on the Monday morning, you've pulled up, just a bit sore, and you feel like you just need that little bit more cushioning to yeah, help absorb something. Yeah. And there's obviously a place for each.
That's right. Shoes. Yep.
So what then sort of tips would you give our listeners if they're considering buying either?
Yeah, I mean, I think it always just comes down to, like, every time you're going to update your shoe and you're thinking about, you know, maybe introducing something new into your rotation, is just to look at, like, where you're at with your training. You know, are you managing any kind of, like, niggles? And how is the shoe going to kind of either complement that, or is it going to potentially aggravate something? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you feel like, you know, you're training really well, you've got no niggles, everything feels strong, you've been doing all your gym work, you know, yeah, absolutely, you might, you know, want to consider just throwing in a minimal shoe just to do some of those strides down at the park in. And then, yeah, the flip side to that is, yeah, if you are suffering from some type of niggle where you are able to run, but, you know, there's some awareness there of something sore, yeah, that's where those maximalist shoes could definitely assist you. Yeah, so I suppose it's just always assessing where you're at as a runner and what are you trying to get through your shoes.
Yeah, I think that's some, yeah, really valuable tips for people. And, like, you know, just nice and simple and some things that the listeners can take away and consider when going to their shops or.
I mean, I think it's definitely worth talking to someone. Look, I don't think there's a lot of risk involved with maybe if you were to, you know, suddenly go out and buy a pair of maximalist shoes. Like, I think for the most part, you're probably going to be, you know, relatively safe there with introducing them into your rotation. I think it's probably more the minimalist shoes where you'd want to make sure you're having those conversations with someone that understands them and that they're not going to kind of suddenly interrupt your training too much.
That's great. Thanks very much, Sammy, for that information and the chat. I've obviously taken quite a bit out there, and I think I'll be doing a bit of research on some good looking Hokas.
I
might have to report back to you.
Yeah, get some Hokas into the rotation, and that'll help with that sore Achilles you've got. And just another good shoe that you can get out there and run in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. That's right. No, looking forward to it. Well, very, very good, Sammy. I'm sure we'll have you on again in a couple of weeks. And enjoy the rest of the day, and thanks again.
Pleasure, Matty. Good to chat, mate.
Thanks for that, Matty and Sammy. Always great to hear about shrews, and definitely going to be I'm back on the Yarraville website again this arvo, and I'll be looking at some more shoes because I'm always learning about these different options out there, and Sammy's probably getting sick of me asking you questions, but it's just great to learn more about the shoes that I think sometimes we probably undervalue the knowledge that these guys have, and that can really assist with your running and overall feeling through your feet. Maddie, yep. Another business and just to follow on that chat we were talking about some of these businesses, I guess, being directly impacted on with COVID and the, you know, changes within the industry of running and, you know, lack of races and all the rest of it. I think there's another a business based up in Brisbane that we've done a lot of work with, and you featured on their blog. Great guys. We met them up at the Gold Coast last year, actually. And Maddie was there from Fractal. And their range of caps, we've got our Run to BB collab cap that is dropping next week. I've seen photos from the factory that's left. It's looking really good. But they released a Legionnaire cap to their range. Did you see that during the week, Maddie?
Yeah, I did, mate. It popped up on my socials. I was like, well, I haven't seen one of those caps for quite some time. And it sort of took my fancy. And I saw that they sort of, well, they did their sort of a pre-release kind of update and said, you know, they're going to be available. I don't know, it might have been Wednesday night, they'll first go up online. And I was like, oh, I've got to remember that. But I really didn't think they'd sell out. But I think, the cap that I wanted sold out basically straight away, and I didn't see it till last night. I remembered, and you know, like, damn it, checked it out. Ah, missed it. So I'll have to
They've got another one, I think, on there. I was just on their website. They've got two versions now, it looks like. So nice. One's a camo one. So that looks pretty cool. But yeah, probably not in my I don't know if I'll go down the track, but you're a fashion icon, so I can't really compete with you, mate. So
yeah, I don't know if you're hipster enough.
What's that?
I don't know if you're hipster enough to rock one of them.
I don't know if I could pull it off, but I could. Great idea, especially coming in the sun. You know, when we start getting some down here, when the sun finally appears, it'll be definitely useful. And I know it's trail runners especially, because they've got a big sort of foothold in the trail run market. Fractal really well received. And I can imagine this would be a ripping cap to wear for those real long runs as well.
Yeah, I think I might have to look into getting that camo one to hide my head.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've had a few questionable. I think just earlier we were sharing in the coaches group chat, there was some banter going on with you being compared to the Deeks back in the 70s with your setup. There was some City of the Surf video that we were sort of circulating around, and yes, you're in the firing line as, you know, bearded, long-haired, sort of your bearded long hair setup is very much of the 70s runner.
Yeah, well, I mean, Deke's not just my hero in the running sense. I think the fashion senses are up there too with his beard and mop of hair that he's got going on. Yeah, so I've grown mine out, but I actually shaved the beard the other day because I'm going to grow an ISO 2.0 mo, starting from scratch. I started day one of 2.0 ISO, and I'll trim it off and get the mo going for what, 4 more weeks or so.
Did you ever know about this?
I did tell her, and yeah, she just sort of stormed away, didn't really say much, so I don't know if she's too happy about it.
some questionable hair and beards and growth going on in Melbourne at the moment, that's for sure. Because
Dave P had some
That's right, that video will be coming out, and I think that'll break Instagram when that one comes out, because he's got a real he's got the afro going there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I think there'll be a lot of impressed people with his ISO beard.
Well, I better wind this up before you start going through the archives of some of my photos or some of my bad fashion and start ripping into me. But yeah, it'd be great. All right, that's enough, Eddie, mate. But great to catch up as always, Matty. And always good to chat running and shoes, and also to hear from Lauren. And I think it's her messages overall at the end there about just, you know, enjoying running for what it is at the moment, and particularly for people in Melbourne. Let's just keep rolling with the punches as we can here.
Really grateful for the time that Lauren given us for that interview, and Sammy obviously also with the shoe chat. And next week though, we're going to have another segment of our training talk, so the second installment with Brady recording with our 62-minute man, and talking about fashion sense and being well groomed, Andy Buchanan.
Yes, yeah, Andy puts us all to shame with his hair. So, I think we might have to make that into a bit of a video or something there, because we wouldn't want the listeners to not see Andy in full flight. So, we'll get working on that as well.
And then we'll be revealing a few new coaches too, added to the stable. Looking to be helping people really all over the world, and in particular West Australia and Queensland. So, I mean, we've got a few athletes already, obviously, around in Australia, but yeah, they'll be a bit more local and knowing the scenes around there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there are a couple of those new coaches who, yeah, they've spent a lot of time in those areas and have some connections. So it'll be good to have a few people on the ground in other states, Yeah, so it's all good. We'll definitely stay tuned to the socials, because we'll be always keen to hear from the listeners with some questions, whether it's about shoes, training, Matt's fashion, anything that you want to know about. We'll definitely be keen to help you out and chuck it on the air when we can get an answer.
Yeah, sounds good, mate.
Yeah. All right. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, mate.
Now, everyone. Yeah, stay safe and enjoy the rest of your run.